Okay. I'm not supposed to be crying, and Diane put that out there because I'm not that person that's going to approach you. So that's my sponsor, you know, put me in service work again after, what, 6.5 years? Okay, so I had an energy drink. It already talked fast, and so it's like, calm down. So what I learned in here is I can't do it alone. So I'm going to ask for your help to, again, take a minute and say the serenity prayer with me so I can just, like, calm down because I'm just, like, on 1,000. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference today. Okay, my nose can't keep running. Okay, I'm Tina. I'm an addict. My sobriety date is May 3rd, 2011. Last night we had a speaker, and I know some of you HNI people weren't here, but the thing I took from that is regardless of our backgrounds, where we came from, our stories are similar. On one end, she had a loving mother and father and family who didn't use, and she still ended up using. I was way on the other end of the spectrum. I had a single mother who took care of me. I didn't know my father until I was like 35 years old. My family used and drank, even my mother. And I was physically, mentally abused my whole childhood. But she said that she had always been looking for love, and I identified with that. I totally identified with that, and that's how I live my life. I had a child because I wanted that love from somebody who didn't really know me, and I wanted it to be unconditional. We had that in common, me and the speaker, yesterday. So I learned here that, you know, you don't sit up here and ramble. I know I'm an addict, y'all addicts, my mind goes. So I'm gonna try to keep it to the point. And I learned in CA that we share in a general way what happened. What it was like, what happened, how it is now. So I'm an only child on my mother's side, and I have three younger sisters on my dad's side. And this is the first time ever in my life that I've said that I'm an older sister of three younger sisters on my dad's side. Because as I said, I just met my father for the first time in 35 years. Or when I was 35 years old. So what it was like, you guys know what it was like. I was a crackhead. I never wanted to admit that, because I look good on the outside. I'm sorry, I'm so vain, but that's how I was. I look good on the outside. I kept my hair done. I made sure my clothes was. I had jewelry. I didn't want to look like my cousins. I didn't want to look like the women out on the street. Even though I was still doing the same things they were doing, but I didn't want you to know that. So you couldn't tell me I was a crackhead. Why? When other people was telling me, oh, you don't look like no crackhead, you looking good. I could keep a job when I wanted one. I had a man taking care of me, so I went out on the street. I had a car, so it's like, I'm not that. I just choose to get high, and that's how I was. I used crack cocaine for the first time when I was 19, because I was trying to escape that childhood. I was trying to escape all of that. I didn't want to think about it. And so I got high. Ended up meeting an older man, and he introduced me. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. And I know everybody has heard of Jehovah's Witnesses. And so it was strict. My mother was strict. When I got of age, I hid it. I realized my body could get whatever I wanted. I didn't know that because I wasn't raised like that. I was raised, I was ugly. Don't speak unless you're spoken to. Don't think, I'll think for you. So when I got out there, it was no holds barred. Whatever I wanted to try, that's what I was gonna try. And I tried crack cocaine, and it was like, oh, that ain't nothing. tried it again, and I was gone. I was gone. And so everything that I said I wasn't gonna never do, because I saw my mother drink. I saw my, you know, my relatives drink. I remember her having those little small bottles that you used to buy at the liquor store for like 99 cents in her purse, and, you know, she'd be drinking it in the car, or, you know, she would take me over on Wells to go to my auntie's apartment, and they pop the trunk and bring out their little cups and this and that, and it's like, I'm not gonna be that, because alcohol made her just mean, and it was just, I'm not gonna do that, I'm not gonna be that person. And sure enough, I turned into that person. So you know what drugs make you do, stuff you say you're not gonna never do, I did it. I'm not gonna stoop that low, I did it. I'm not gonna steal, I pawned everything. All my son's stuff, all my stuff, whatever I could pawn, that's what I was pawning. I'm not gonna sell my body out on the street, I'm gonna do an undercover, and I'm just gonna have the dope dealer come to my house so it ain't for everybody to see and still get high like that. So no, I didn't lose my son, even though he was with me the whole time I was using, going to pick up my stuff with, you know, with him in the car. I wasn't homeless. You know, I had somebody with me that I didn't really care about, but it was convenient. I could keep a job, but not really. But I was dead inside. I tried plenty of times. The speaker last night talked about turning on the gas. I did that. Trying to cut wrists, trying to overdose, I did that. The last time I used, that was my bottom. I'm sitting on my bed, and I'll never forget this day. And I got all these pills, and I'm trying to figure out how many to take of this and that so I won't wake up, because I'm tired. I can't keep doing the same thing over and over. From the time I wake up to the time I go to sleep, that's all I'm thinking about is getting high. I can't think about my son, because that's taking away time from me thinking about getting high. I can't be a mother to him because I'm thinking about getting high. So I'm sitting there, and again, like last night, the thing that stopped me was my son. Because I had a Jerry Springer life that I should have been on Jerry Springer, because I was living with this man who is 11 years older than me, but then I got pregnant with somebody else, and I was still living with this man, and I led him to believe that this was his child, even named the son after him, even though when he came out, he was white as I don't know what. And it's like... You know, I'm an addict, so I'm playing it to the role. Like, this your son, it don't matter. He gonna get dark a little bit long. You know how it is. If his ears is dark, that means he gonna get a little bit dark. You know, but his dad was white, so that wasn't happening. But I named him specifically right after this man. It's on his birth certificate. I had him raise him for a year and a half, and then it was like, you know, I guess somebody, his sister was like, you need to get a DNA test. Got the DNA test, and he was still there. I was an addict. I was manipulative, and I was good at it. That was my job. I was going to be the best, and I was going to con you just to get what I wanted. Because I needed you to watch him while I went to work. Even though while I was at work, I was talking to some other man while you at home watching my son. So I should have been on Jerry Springer. the man I got pregnant by, he wanted nothing to do with my son, you know. And so here I am, just like my mother, a single mother. And while I'm sitting here contemplating how to kill myself, that's my thought. What am I going to do with him? I can't leave him in the hands of this woman who I know what she did to me. I couldn't do that to him. And so for the first time in 19 years, I asked for help. And I admitted I was a drug addict. And that was the hardest thing I had ever had to do. But it was like, God, that felt so wonderful to just say that and not have to be living this lie. So I go to treatment. And you know, as an addict, again, I'm manipulating. I'm just gonna go there. I'm gonna get clean. I'm gonna get my head out of a fog so I can manage life, work, and then still on the weekend go out and have a good time, because that's what I did. Friday night, it's like, we got to go to the club, we got to get dressed up. Before I go there, though, I got to get high. And so that's just, it wasn't in my mind to be who I am today. And so you know how treatment is. You know, you got to go to these meetings, you got to pick up these chips, you got to get a sponsor, and it's like, okay, that's what you say I got to do, that's what I'm going to do. TA has a lovely Quiet Peace meditation book. And today's meditation, I read it and I'm like, okay, God, I hear you. Because this was exactly what it was like for me when I first came to CA. My first CA meeting over at Dewey, where we will be having our open speaker meeting come Monday. So come out. Free food. I learned that at CA, because I wouldn't promote nothing. Okay, so February 24th, here is the meditation for today. It says, I found my home in CA. This is from the Hope, Faith, and Courage, Volume 2, page 60. I started attending CA meetings, and I was willing to do anything. When I first heard Who Was a Cocaine Addict read, I was immediately hooked. Just like the first time I tried crack. I fell in love with CA and felt at home immediately. I heard people share stories like mine, and since they had recovered, I got busy right away. Certainly, my coming to CA wasn't solely to find fellowship and laughter. I suffer from a chronic, progressive, and eventually fatal condition of addiction. Unless arrested in some way, that condition leads me to jails, insanity, and death. I came into CA because jails and insanity had become normal. By the grace of a power greater than my own, I was given clarity to see the truth of my hopelessness and escape death. That same power brought me to Cocaine Anonymous. In recovery and in sharing my life with others, I discovered joy and jubility are commonly present. Consistent with the promise set forth in the Big Book, my healing began when I talked with another addict and we shared our experience, strength, and hope. My first CA group experience took place in a car on the way from a treatment center to a CA meeting. Okay, that didn't really happen to me, but it's in here, so I'm reading. Thus began my journey to the middle of the CA fellowship. Something happens when I am centered in the program. Feelings of difference disappear, and I become joined together with others in brotherly and harmonious action. I have not had a drink or drug since my first meeting of Cocaine Anonymous. I found my home here, and I am intent on doing my part in making this home an attractive and carefree place to dwell. No doubt the most exciting and entertaining aspects of being a CA member are to participate in our many varied events and to be a useful member in the groups to which I belong. I love all forms of CA gatherings, from pancake breakfast to workshops to conventions. I pray I may always see clearly the nature of my disease and remember the truth about its hopelessness. I have been and remain exceedingly blessed to belong to a fellowship that provides everything I need when I need it with love, kindness, and grace. I will continue to do my part and make our fellowship thrive so we all continue to have the comfort of calling CA our home. That's what it was like for me. Because I was alone. I didn't have a mother, didn't have a father, I didn't have brothers and sisters that I knew about, and I needed that. Because I had built this wall up, and you weren't gonna get behind that. You weren't gonna get behind that because that meant I would have to open up. That meant I would be hurt, and I wasn't finna feel, I had hurt all my life. I wasn't finna feel that hurt. But I was tired, like my sponsor said. And I knew I had to live for my son, but I didn't know how. CA taught me that. I know when I first came to meetings, I would sit here and I would listen to speakers. And I didn't wanna hear what you had or what you got back. I wanted to know how you kept living, clean and sober. I wanted to know how you laughed and was content with life and able to get up every day and go to work and be a mother or a sister or wife or husband and still be happy without using. But I learned through the years that saying those things that they've gotten back are part of promises. Because I sit here today and my life is nothing like I thought it would be. But my sponsor asked me when I first came in what I was willing to do to stay clean and sober. And as I said before, I worked damn hard to get high. My mind raced 24/7 on how I could get high. So I was willing to do whatever it took to stay clean and sober. Now, I ain't know how to do that, and that's where my sponsor came in. She was my higher power because, I was raised religious, but I knew that exacting God, that I wasn't walking the line, and so he didn't love me. He didn't care about me. How is he going to help me? But I was clean and sober. Days. I had never been clean. I couldn't keep a dollar in my pocket because everything went to feeding my addiction. So she said, call her every day. It's like, okay, I barely pick up the phone now. I'm still looking at call ID. Like, if I don't see your name, I'm not answering. So now you want me to call you? Even my son would be like, you call your sponsor today? And it's like, okay. Again, because I was raised, I'm grown. You can't tell me nothing. I'll do what I want to do. You can't tell me what to do. But I tried that for 19 years, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to live. So she said, call. I called. She said, go to a meeting. Are you going to be there? No, somebody will be there to meet you. And it's like, I'm not good with strangers. I don't know these people. And it's like, I never forget. She told me to go to this meeting on the south side, that it would be somebody there meeting me. And true to fashion, here I pull up in my drop top. With the music blasting, some kind of rap music. And I'm looking like, oh God, who is this person that's supposed to meet me? And here come this little girl running and grinning. And I'm like, why is she so happy? Like, that was the opposite of me. I was doom and gloom. Unless I was high, I wasn't laughing. What is there to be laughing about? I'm sober. Like, life ain't good. I'm about to be put out of my house. What I got to be laughing about? But I went. Because that's what was suggested. Because again, I was willing to do whatever somebody said to stay clean and sober. I worked these steps. I'm looking at this stuff and it's like, when I was younger, I read to escape. And I still do, I read a lot. And I was reading that stuff and I'm like, well, yeah, I don't really know how that's gonna work, but if that's what they say, then that's fine. So we worked these steps. I'm not gonna go through all of the steps. That's what your sponsor's for. And there's plenty of people here that were willing to be your sponsor, me included. I would have never said that before. It's like, I don't really care about what you're going through. I got my own crap. But CA taught me to be different than what I usually was. Because I was a loner. I got high by myself in my bedroom with the door closed. My son, don't knock on the door. You got everything. I don't want to be bothered. And I had to let that go. Because how am I going to be of service to anybody else if I got that door shut? So we worked these steps. And I'm the kind, it has to be proven to me that this is going to work. So I know y'all have heard it plenty, get that phone list, call some people before you pick up, and it's like, whatever. Sure, I'm trying not to swear, but particular day, I'm down on the south side, at SDC, trying to get some money to pay my bills, my rent, so I don't get kicked out. I'm running through all these hoops, and they not gonna help me, so I go back to the car and I'm boo-hooing and crying, and it's like, I got money, I'm finna go get high. And it's like, no, let me do what these people say. So when I go back to the meeting, I can tell them that this crap don't work. So I got on my phone list and I'm calling my sponsor first. She don't pick up. And I'm like, ain't that something? Like, she's supposed to be here to help me and she ain't picking up. It's like, okay, let me call some more people. Don't nobody picking up. And it's like, okay, this last phone number, I'm going to call somebody. They don't pick up. I'm going to get high. And And God showed up, even when I thought he wouldn't. And somebody picked up, and I didn't get high. And it's like, okay, maybe this does work. Maybe this does work. I had to change everything. And we talked about that today. It was terrifying. Because I was comfortable with pain. I was comfortable with heartache. I was comfortable with sadness. Being happy was foreign. It didn't feel right. I didn't know how to live in that life. Being in this fellowship taught me that. Because even when I couldn't express how I felt inside, I could just go to a meeting and cry. And people understood. People understood. Everything was woe was me, but that was me. That was all me. I did that fourth step, and it was like I took off that old skin and I was new. Because that was the first time in what 30-some years I actually looked at me. Everything that happened in my life from me being a child to now, it was me. It was me. I found a higher power of my own understanding. My sponsor told me to write down the qualities I would want in my higher power. And that worked for me. Because I needed my God to love me regardless if I messed up. Because I was going to mess up because I'm human. But I needed him to accept me. I needed to believe in something to keep me clean and sober and to keep me going. And when I tell you my God has showed up and showed out, he has showed up and showed out. Because I'm standing here clean and sober. This fellowship has taught me how to be a mother. Has taught me how to be a respectable woman. Because when I say my mouth was like, whoo, it was like, whoo. I couldn't say a word without MF this, MF that. It was like really bad. It was just a regular language to me. That's how it was. I got hecklers in the front that I'm trying to ignore because they just no good at all. But they the closest thing I got to blood. I said something to somebody earlier. And I don't really know if it's pertinent right now, but I remember being here and where I'm at now, and it's like totally different because when I came in, all I had to do was stay clean and sober. That's it. That's all I had to worry about. I didn't really have to worry about other things. It was just stay clean and sober. Now life is a little bit more complicated. I got to deal with people, places, things, and I got to do it nicely. That ain't always, you know, possible. But I'm working on that. It's time. It's time and my attitude of trying to be better. Once I shut that down, I'm stuck. And I don't want to be stuck. I want to progress. I want to be better than what I am. These people taught me this because not only did I get a surrogate mother, I got a best friend, I got older brothers, I got aunts, I got cousins. These are people I would not normally mix with. I just wouldn't. That wasn't me. But it's taught me how to get along with people. It's taught me how to be loving and tolerant. Because life goes on, and it's not always fun, and it's not always easy. Working these steps has taught me no matter where I'm at, I can always tap into these steps. And I'll give you an example. I'm on a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean, and I'm having a fit in my mind. I'm just like, whoo, I'm ready to go off. I'm not in a good mood. And it's like, how you in paradise in a crappy mood? Why you like that? Because it's me. Because I want to run everything. I want things to be how I want it to be. You ain't acting right. You ain't saying the things I want you to say. And I got a problem with that. So what I do? I do what my sponsor taught me from the very first beginning. I get my journal, and I go out there, and I look at this water, this beautiful creation that God has created and saw fit to put me in, and I sit down and I write. And I talk to my God, because that's how I communicate with my higher power. And it's like, God, please give me the love and tolerance that I need. Please help me to get out of me and stop having all these expectations and just be accepting of what is and how it is and be happy with that. And again, my God showed up and showed out. It's all about how I perceive things and my attitude. Because when I want to be a bitch, I can be a bitch. When I want to be happy, I can be happy. It's all about how I perceive things and how I accept things. My best friend now, when I first came in, used to throw the big book at me and be like, read page 417, acceptance. And I'd be like, I'm tired of reading that crap. I'm tired of that. But every time I did, my whole attitude changed. Because I ain't got the power. I think Tina got the power to do all kind of stuff and have y'all get up and do this and do that because I want to be the director. I ain't the director. I ain't the director. I might holler a little, but that's just, you know, me playing around or BSing or whatever. God saw something in me, and he saw fit for me to be here. So I could be that mother. So I could be that friend, so I could be that sister. Because for years I was all alone as an only child, and you know, I didn't know how to have no relationships with people. I asked for help, and God directed me to CA. He moved my feet to get up and walk that distance to ask this woman to sponsor me that I didn't know from Adam. He put it in my heart to work these steps and his program to the best of my ability. He's made it possible for me to sit here and share my story with you guys, because I know if it's possible for me to stand here clean and sober, it's possible for you. You just have to be willing. And you have to be willing to go that extra length to do whatever, regardless if you don't like it, you don't understand it, you don't like how it's being brought to you, to do it. Because we thought we had this, and look where we at. Look where we at. It's nothing but our pride and ego. Because even now, I still have pride and ego. I still don't want to ask people for help. I still want to try to do things my way. Because I'm hard-headed. And until that pain becomes great enough, then I change. But I didn't know how to change. I didn't know what to do or how to do it. These steps and your sponsor in this program teaches you that. We don't know how to change on our own. That's why we need this help. That's why it's here for us. That's why we have these spiritual tools that are there for you to pick up whenever you want them. If you decide to go out and come back, they still here. If you decide to go out and come back again, they still here. Now, I don't know that because God has saw fit that once I came into recovery that time, I've stayed. That obsession to use has been lifted. So I know it's possible. I know it's possible. Living proof of that. I don't want to keep rambling because my sponsor was like, keep it short. Because even after 6.5 years, I'm still listening to suggestions. Because again, I still don't know stuff. When Tina starts running it, it's a train wreck. So I'm gonna say this for this heckler, because he wanted to get up here and say this, but I'm gonna say it for him. I'm trying to be loving and tolerant and nice. I'm trying. I pray for the willingness every day. Does it always happen? No. And that's the thing. We aren't perfect. We're never going to be perfect. But I know how to live life without picking up. I have lost my grandmother. I have lost a father that I did not know for years, and I didn't have any contact with him. And I didn't pick up. I didn't have to. It was okay. I feel that pain, and it passes. That's life. We're addicts. We're selfish. We don't want to feel all that. Well, guess what? Life ain't fair. So what you gonna do? I accept it, and I move forward. I mean, I wasn't there when he died, but I have this newfound relationship with sisters. That is awesome. Because I have a best friend who has taught me how to be a sister, because we done went at it, and, you know, back and forth. But the first thing she told me when we first got together is, no matter what we go through, we don't ever stop being friends. We don't ever stop being friends. Because that was my thing. You pissed me off. I'm done with you. I don't have to talk to you. I don't need you in my life. I don't need that headache. And it's easier just to be alone. No, it's easier not to feel all of this inside. It's easier just to say, I'm sorry. I'll do better. I'll try to do better and move forward. Don't tap me with the time. Okay, so this is the last thing I'm gonna say. To go from having no one and to have the majority of these people in this room go to bat for me, for somebody to see something in me and ask me to speak, to having this wonderful person in my life who just runs me ragged with stress and strain, but I love him to death. God saw fit to put him in my life, and you know, I'm learning a whole lot of stuff with that. to the newcomers, because that's why we're here. This is what keeps us clean and sober. I know I don't do my fair share of getting out to the newcomers, and God is still working with me. But we are here because of you. So I'm gonna say this to you guys, and I'm gonna keep it simple. Get you a sponsor. Work these steps. It's possible. Anything is possible. I got clean, I graduated college. I could barely graduate high school. I got a job that I've been at for 2 years. I couldn't keep a job 2 months. I got a son who told me he could not tell me he loved me because I was a horrible mother. I can't get rid of this boy now, and he's 21. These promises come true. But just like anything else, it takes work. It ain't no half-assing. It ain't no, I'm gonna pick this, I'm gonna pick that. Oh, I might do this, I might not do that. It's going all in. Just like you ran to go get high, run to recovery. Get you a higher power, because you can't do it on your own. God can, and he will, if you just give it a chance. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Tina.